Paul, welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. This is episode 2 about psychopharmaceuticals. I talk with Dr. Laura Hansen, and we cover the non-pharmaceutical approach to things like autism, ASD, ADHD, anxiety, depression. She has a method of developmental analysis of milestones, brain mapping, and then management that includes things like exercise, nutrition, testing for SIBO that actually is present in more people than we realized, and then brain neurofeedback. Exciting outcomes. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul here, coming to you from the heart. My topic today is hope. Today is a new day. I was sitting early morning, as I do most mornings. I get up just as the sun is rising, and I was really distressed. I was working through a lot of personal issues, feeling a little hopeless, honestly. And in the moment I was in that reflective, deep searching, and I thought, well, let me just start working on my emails. And there arrived this picture. What you're seeing is a picture of the Columbia River Gorge in Oregon, and you're looking at a sunrise coming through the clouds. It was like, it was so powerful to me. It reminded me that no matter what's happening or has happened, we don't need to despair. You know, it reminds me of birth, and you get a baby and that just incredible hope that comes around that new life. And then there's also sickness and tragedy. And we look for hope for healing in whatever it is we're going through. And I recently went through the death of my mom. And I remember somehow within her spirit was this never-ceasing hope for whatever it was. And she would say, I don't know what's going to happen. But she wasn't fearful. She had a hope for whatever it was that was next. So let's live in hope. You know, how can I love more completely? That's what I want. Welcome, Dr. Laura Hansen. It's such an honor to have you on our show, With the Wind.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I love the fact that you go by your first name, Dr. Laura. That's what I've always done, Dr. Paul. I think you work in pediatrics. Your qualifications blew my mind. You have so many initials after your letter. You're a doctor of chiropractic. You've got a master's in sports health science, concentration in nutrition, pediatric diplomat, degree of Palmer Chiropractic, Bachelor's of Science in Political Science. And the list of all the different certifications and trainings you've had is like, wow, where do you find the time? And you're in clinical practice.
Yes.
So we've got a lot to talk about because I'm so excited about the fact that you have worked with a lot of the population that I've worked with. You know, it was autism, but then there's such a growing number of ADD, ADHD, anxiety, depression, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we'll dive into all that.
Yeah. And now the parents, it's unfortunately, and you even said it in one of your notes to me, is that we're normalizing this and we can't normalize it. The parents are actually saying, well, my kid has ADD, you know, just like all the other kids. Right. And that just, that really breaks my heart that we would limit their potential and where they should innately go by putting a label on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we dive into specifics, maybe just share with our audience, because I just gave a very quick overview, what's been your journey? You know, you could go back as far as you want and bring us up to where you are today, as far as, you know, what got you interested in medicine, why pediatrics, and then you've worked with, you know, kids who are most affected. You know, we call it integrative medicine when we're really working hard to get to root causes. But tell us a little bit about your journey.
Well, I was actually had this plan of being an attorney, and then I wanted to be a Supreme Court justice. And when I first got married and had a baby, I said, well, I'll hold off on law school. I'll become a paralegal. And I'm so blessed to have had that experience first, because it helped me realize that's not what I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So then I really wasn't sure. And my husband at the time was actually going to chiropractic school. So I just went and got a part-time job. But I got so interested. And I said, okay, God, if it's your will for me to do this, I've got a lot of sciences I've got to do in order to go into the program. Help me do all the accelerated programs for chemistry and biology and physics and all this. And I did it. And I even created this poster of a flow chart that everybody wanted a copy of. And I made $5,000 on my flow chart. And I thought, this must be something for me. Well, I was in chiropractic school for 4 years. I was the president of my class all 4 years. And when I got out, I was ready to serve. I loved it. I loved the idea of really working with the body and really helping people change their life and go in a healthier direction. And then one of the first practices that I had, there was a little girl that came in and she screamed whenever she heard my voice. And I had to whisper. And I couldn't touch her. I couldn't even use these little activator things they have in chiropractic. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? And back then, my office was just loaded with books. If I didn't know something, I was back there reading as fast as I possibly could. But it got me into development. And I go, what is it about sound for her? And so sound, when you're born, you actually hear low frequency sound and acquire middle and high over the first 3 years of life. Whoa, okay. So what happened that would maybe give her some kind of alteration in her perception of sound? And that's really where it started. Huh. And I just started going with it. And the next thing you know, I was in the program to become a pediatric diplomate. Then they asked me to teach in the program and to teach neurology. Oh, yeah, that's a real easy topic. And of course, I wanted to do a good job. And then that's when I became a neurodevelopmental therapist and was just blown away by primitive reflexes. And I was like, wow, this is like the root of so much. And I really got involved in primitive reflexes and the development. But the interesting part about chiropractic, we talk about the subluxation complex. And so when I was trying to figure stuff out, in that complex, there is a movement piece, there's a neuro piece, there's a muscle piece, there's a chemistry piece, and then there's pathology. So I just started walking back through all those areas. Okay, how are you moving? And if you're supposed to move like this by the time you're this age, can you do it? And then looking at the neurology, how do your eyes move? What can you hear using tuning forks and listening or looking at how they could hear bone and air conduction? And looking at those pieces and making that connection. And it was just one child after another. Their vestibular system was off, their ocular motor was off, their auditory was off. And I actually created a piece of medical equipment that I call the triangle of development, because back then I was just working vestibular. I was just working eyes. I was working auditory, and I didn't feel like I could get anything else done. So I created what I call the triangle of development. And literally, you're on a chair. It's a vestibular chair. It moves clockwise, counterclockwise on this magnificent shaft that Dr. Larry Schultz developed. There is an auditory piece and a visual piece, and it's a 10-hour program, 2 hours a day, 5 days in a row. And you're in the dark, and this is all the stimulation that you have. And I'm able to do pre and post after that, and the changes were phenomenal. So now I'm getting really excited, right? Nice. So I tie functional medicine into it. We always do a lot of labs. But I had a real aha moment 7 years ago. My daughter, when she was 16, was in a terrible car accident. And she suffered a severe traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. And I know you're familiar with the Glasgow Coma Scale. So when they picked her up, she was an 8. And that scale goes from 3 to 15. 15 is mild, 3 is brain dead. And she was an 8. And then when they got her to the hospital, they gave her a 4. She was dying. She had multiple brain bleeds. She was in a non-induced coma for about 12 days. And then she had to relearn how to walk, talk, eat, toilet, dress herself. And if you met her today, you wouldn't even know that she has been through that. Now, I'm mama, and I had to be mama, but I have a lot of colleagues, and we came together, and we all share very similar thoughts about neurology and brain. And literally, it took about 2.5 years. I closed my practice back then. It took about 2.5 years, but she went on. She went on to college. She graduated magnum cum laude.
Wow.
Today, she's just marvelous. And when I walked back into this office in 2019 is when I went back into private practice. And I looked around and I knew that I had been prepared for that journey. I was doing all of this before that day. And I feel so blessed that we went through that. I wouldn't change one piece of our story. And that's why I feel like we should never limit somebody and say, you are this and you're going to be this for the rest of your life. And I got to tell you, I've had personal experience, clinical experience, and I just think it's so important to help people have hope and educate and teach them how the body works and do the things that that individual body needs and watch the miracles happen.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that personal story. That is powerful. You know, when you have that connection, and in your case, what a glorious story, because it was basically total recovery, right?
That's right.
Which is not always the case.
That's right.
Take me back a bit, because I think in our interactions, it sounded like you did a lot of work with severe autism, and now it's more or less ADD and ADHD anxiety, that sort of thing, which I've seen that shift as well. But there are still sort of in pediatrics, to me, the toughest cases are those nonverbal, severely autistic kids, non-speaking, nonverbal, who oftentimes are in pain, whether it's GI distress or headaches or who knows sometimes. What have you found? I mean, you're using modalities that I know nothing about, some of them. What have you found to be most effective? And I know there's no one size fits all. We individualize to the patient, but there are certain things that you kind of realize, wow, I get a lot of progress when I do this. And I'm just curious. For our audience, a lot of times we'll have parents who are in that boat of having a child who what they've tried hasn't worked. Walk us through a little bit of that.
Okay. So one of the very first things that I found for the autistic community was low cholesterol. We have been driving cholesterol down for over 50, maybe 60 years. It gets such a bad rap. Your body makes 80% of its own cholesterol. You use cholesterol to build your brain, for your neurotransmitters, for your hormones, for your stress chemistry. And so when we're constantly driving this down, there isn't enough to actually build the brain. So I do a lot of blood work, and I was always looking at that cholesterol number, and then making that correlation to, especially when the language was delayed. And the other thing was about mirror neurons and oxytocin and the need for cholesterol for that. So there's a great company that actually makes a product very inexpensively too, that you can really build up the cholesterol in the body. And when we did that, we always make sure familiar tendencies, right? We make sure that we're not dealing with lipoprotein little a or high MPO numbers, meaning high inflammatory markers from the cardiovascular system. But if we're in a safe place, we put these kids on this product. And in many instances, language would start to come about in about 2 to 3 weeks. So that was always a game changer. The next one that I would find would be MTHFR. Yes.
Before we move on to MTHFR, because the cholesterol piece, whenever I've checked kids for
Yes.
cholesterol panels, for example, lipid panels, they tend to be lowish compared to us
Yeah.
adults who can be out of control high. I was sort of stumbled on more information about using omega-3 fatty acids, that sort of thing. You're referring to something else, it sounds like. Can you give me a little more information about what category of product we're talking about?
Well, it's actually made out of lamb's wool. It's called Sonic Cholesterol from a company called New Beginnings Nutritionals. And their platform is all about children with special needs. So they have a lot of products. I've actually been using Sonic Cholesterol for probably over 20 years. Now, you do have to have the blood work, and the doctor involved has to be the one to put the referral into their system, but then the parent can order it themselves. But it's
Interesting.
actually made out of lamb's wool.
Fascinating. Okay, thanks for that clarification. Yes, I was at a conference in early 2000, 2002, right around that time. Room full of maybe 1,000 parents, mostly with autistic kids, and the MTHFR was brought up, and they asked the audience, "How many of you or children who have autism have a major MTHFR glitch?" And almost every hand went up. It was like,
Yeah.
wow, that was a wake-up call to me, but I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Well, I've been looking at this one for quite a while as well, and I see it even in the group more currently as well as in the past. But there's many platforms to this. So this is your methylation pathway. This is how you're going to get toxins out of your body. And it really has a very high impact on the brain and the cardiovascular system, which then you're talking about whole body, right? And I've seen different presentations based on if you have a single mutation and you have a double mutation, and is it on one variant compared to the other variant? So in particular, that C variant is the one that carries the homocysteine problem. And then when I read this part, let me just preface, because I want to make sure your audience doesn't go, "Oh my gosh, I have this, therefore I'm going to get." People have to understand genes are not linear. They're based on expression, what's available, what's going to make them actually go in a particular direction. But there's a risk for bipolar, schizophrenia, so different types of mood disorders. And when I first read this, though, my first reaction was, why aren't we testing every single person that's in a mental institution for this? Why don't we see if they have this mutation and then support it? Because everything you read, you just have to support the pathway. What
Right.
does the pathway need? It needs folate. In order to
Methylfolate.
really, yes, in order, well, if you're mutated, you got to make sure you have the methyl. But so take it back. What is the main thing they put women on when they're pregnant? They want to make sure that you've got enough folic acid in your body to make the conversions, right? And they found this mutation initially in the population of women that we're always having miscarriages.
That's
So there's just so many pieces to this thing. And then and this is like, I feel like a little Sherlock Holmes. This is my approach in practice, as I go, okay, well, what about this? What about this? And you're folding it out all the time. And so the next thing I started to find was all these tongue ties. And that's a midline defect. Literally getting too much fascia build up in your mouth. So it's almost like your mouth is shrink wrapped. And now this child can't can't either swallow well, articulate well, or they're not getting enough oxygen. Okay, next layer, the Moro reflex. So the Moro reflex activates three things in the neurology: arousal, CO2O2 reflex, and the sympathetic nervous system. So this is what I mean by when we look at these pieces like MTHFR, look at how far reaching it can go. It can cause brain inflammation. It can cause you not to be able to methylate. If you are vaccinating, then your child can't get those toxins out of the body. The bucket is tipping with all kinds of inflammation. And now if I've got an exaggerated form where I can't get enough oxygen, and then we just masked them for the last 2 years, 3 years. I mean, it's so much. How yeah. far one little thing could possibly impact the health of a child or you.
Yeah. So the MTHFR is so easy to test for, and it's so easy to manage in the sense that you give them the nutrient they're missing.
That's it. That's yeah. exactly right.
So information is powerful in that instance. That's excellent. So I imagine you have people coming to you who've gotten a diagnosis from a pediatrician. My peers are quick to label and treat. And then sometimes things aren't going so well for kids. So I was certainly, before I retired, seeing so much anxiety, depression, ADD, ADHD, and the reflex reaction for the establishment pediatric kind of care is, here's a pharmaceutical product. Yeah. And occasionally they're wonderful. I have seen them be super effective at helping focus and therefore function in school. But boy, you get into the anxiety, depression, and even the ADHD themselves, it's sometimes questionable whether it's helpful at all. And then there are side effects. What's been your observation over the years in the realm of, ADHD, anxiety, depression, those sort of things?
Well, that is a very big population in my office. And so when I initially look at a kid, I do a mechanical chemical brain approach. We'll always do the brain map, which is going to tell us what's going on in their brain. The interesting part of the brain map is it is a picture of how their development went because they're so close to the beginning.
Can you explain brain map a little more? Because it's a term that, yes, most mainstream folks don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Okay. So when you do a brain map, the goal of it is to look at where the brain waves are dominant, because there are locations. All of your brain waves are supposed to be there. So brain waves are delta, which is your sleep wave, theta, which is your precursor to sleep, imagination and subconscious. Alpha is your calm focus. Beta has three different tiers to it, but that's the one that we would really use for executive function. It's a faster wave. And so the more fast waves you have a greater tendency towards anxiety. Mm. The less fast waves that you have a greater tendency towards depression. So, but for a child, like before 8 years old, your dominant brain wave should be alpha. As you start to go in towards puberty, you start to get some low beta coming on, becoming more dominant. So when we do the map, we're able to see, are the brain waves in the correct range? Are they in the correct place? But one of the reasons why I was a contributor to the book I was telling you about, the QEEG for neurofeedback, was because a lot of people are treating neurofeedback as a standalone therapy. Neurofeedback is the therapy that follows brain mapping. And this is the actual practice of putting your brain waves in the correct place. And it's very comfortable. It's all non-invasive. In fact, they're watching a show, entertaining their conscious mind while their subconscious mind is picking up the neat little filters that are involved in the therapy of neurofeedback. But when it comes to a child has to go through developmental progression in order to be able to even get up to this conscious level. So when I do a developmental assessment, after we do the brain map, get the hard part over because you wear a cap, there's 19 channels, you put this goo in the channels, and then you do a recording, eyes open, eyes closed. Then we get them out of the chair, we start moving. And we're looking at simple things, like, for example, jumping jack. Your child should be able, by the age of 5, they should be able to do a jumping jack. And you're looking at the timing between the upper body and the lower body. When I look at a child's developmental progression, they're going from, here I am in this little fetal position, and then I start lifting my head, and then I start using my forearms, my upper trunk, then my lower trunk, then my pelvis, then my legs. So the legs come on before the upper body. Or I'm sorry, legs come on after the upper body. So when a child does a jumping jack, you're looking at the timing between the upper body and the lower body. And the interesting part is that, man, they look so enthusiastic when they're doing it. And they might be moving their hands really well, but their feet might be staying close together and just jumping up and down. So timing. Okay, so why is that important? Timing is how the brain works. You have specialty centers on the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain, and they go through timing to communicate. So we go through a variety of movements to see. And if that child has interruption, I like to refer to it like a set of dominoes. You know, when you put dominoes together and you give that one, that little push, it just all flows effortlessly, right?
Yep.
Well, think about development. If something didn't happen when it was supposed to, like this idea of crawling. People telling parents that it's no big deal if your kid crawls or not. It's just crazy to me. But let's just say for simplicity, at crawling, you didn't crawl. And maybe you scooted on your bottom rather than hands and knees. So we've got a couple of dominoes out of place. So when I go to push, it gets interrupted. It gets stopped. Now the kid on the outside, they look like they're still going strong. They're still growing up. They're still getting bigger. But what happened to the connection? And then, of course,
brain connections.
Yeah,
as a result brain connections. Of crawling, cross motor activity with visual input, that sort of thing.
Yes, exactly. And if you've got that problem, how do you pay attention? And I find one of the biggest parts that creates this anxiety, kids want to be like their peers. And when they're not like their peers, they don't know what to do, and they have no point of reference to ask somebody, hey, when you're up at the board, I can't really follow that line of print. They don't have that cognitive ability yet. So what do? They just either freeze frame, they just keep trying, but something's missing. And now they're getting either anxious or depressed. And then when you add a psychotropic drug to it, I'm sure you're going to tap on that one, but these drugs have not been tested on kids this small. There's a great book called ADHD Nation. I highly recommend it. And he was going through the history. And now what we're seeing in that era where it all started of ADHD kind of medication, these young people in their late 20s and early 30s, they're really having a lot of memory issues because that synaptic communication, it's not coming back quite the way they thought.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm having a slight aha moment that clearly I'm sure you've had this a long time ago, but instead of waiting till our kids are in school several years into the school system and somebody notices, wow, they're not paying attention very well, how early could you pick this up? Because if when you understand that developmental sequence like you talked about, and I imagine you have ways of intervening to allow, say, that non-crawling kid to get some cross motor activity going. What would be the ideal? So we've got parents watching who have a new baby and they're going, wow, this is fascinating. They're maybe as fascinated as I am. All right. If you've got a new baby, you've got a chance to do this different. Talk to those parents who have a young infant or even a toddler about when they can start to do what, and hopefully instead of waiting and medicating down the road, avoid that whole cascade of events.
Well, I'm really glad that you asked it. I wish I could tell you there's just one certain age, but I'll give it in bullet points. Number one, if you're thinking about having a baby, do some work on yourself and know your own state of health before you conceive. That is so important. Number two, if there was any interruption in the delivery of that baby. Now, I have a child via C-section, so there's no judgment from me, okay? But I learned because of him that there was a lot that was missed, and it wasn't until second grade that I was able to get this insight that also started me down this path of really looking at child development. So when we don't come out through the birth canal, there's an enormous amount of neurological work that's already been interrupted. But something cool that you can do with a baby that maybe you're sitting there going, oh, dear God, my baby's a C-section. Start taking your hands and literally from the crown of the head, give it pressure and go all the way down. And I mean, cover it in every single angle and mimic what that pressure. Pressure is a neurological track. Provide pressure to the baby so that that neurological track can start to come on. Sometimes that might be the domino that you slip back in and things start moving forward. Your newborn, even at 3 months, should be big, beautiful eyes, because you have your adult eyes. Your face grows into your eyes. So your baby, when people come up, should look at that person, and everybody with a baby goes, oh, you're so cute, right? The baby should automatically look back at mom, and mom typically goes, oh, it's okay, you can talk to them. And that's mirror neurons connecting. Does your baby reflect that? Okay. Because that's part of neurological development, being able to imitate. If your child isn't crawling, one thing I would tell you to do, and it's their time to crawl, put a metronome, and they're free, put a metronome on your phone. So I'm going to put a metronome on. Now, mom at one end, dad at the other. Somebody grab the leg, somebody grab the arms, and follow the tempo and cross crawl. Huh. And I'm using 54 beats per minute because that's the rhythm of the human body. Okay. If you needed to slow down at first, that's perfectly fine. But you're providing auditory rhythm as well as the cross crawl pattern. Okay. A lot of times it's low tone. So we use kinesio tape on the back of the spine. Kinesio tape, you really can get it anywhere. And I would definitely encourage you, if you are somewhere and you're seeing some of these things and you want some support, you're more than welcome to call me and I'll even help you find somebody in your area. We take kinesio tape. It's typically maybe about 2 inches wide. We cut it in half and we put it on each side of the spine. Now, kinesio tape has a pattern to it that if I want to make the muscle fire, all I do is lay it down. If I need a muscle to relax, like in torticollis, I would put a stretch on it. So it's opposite of what you would innately think. Okay. But we put the kinesio tape on their little spines. And in fact, I'm going to show you a picture. That is a baby Yeah. Now they're crawling. And we put kinesio tape on their back.
And does that tape tend to be stretched out a little bit or just laid on?
No, when you're trying to get when you're low tone. So this is what a baby, low tone babies, when they go to try to sit, they look smiling at you and they literally just fall to the ground.
Yeah, I've seen that many times.
So you just lay the tape, because now what you're doing is you're trying to say, shorten up muscles, shorten up, so that this baby can actually use their little erector muscles. So there are so many things that you can do. And over on my website, under my podcast, there is actually Dr. Laura Hansen's Guide to Developmental Milestones. So your audience is welcome to go over there and download it. It's free. Everything is not there, but it is. It's like 6 pages long. But it's to help you realize, please don't follow what the CDC is telling you. We need to make sure our children, our babies, are hitting those signposts. If it started back when they were a baby, I guarantee you it's going to be an issue when they become school age.
Yep. And your website is connectmybrain.com. Is that correct?
Yep. That's mine. Connectmybrain.com.
Okay. Well, there it is behind you. Very good. So that sounds amazing. And it sounds like something all parents should definitely pay attention to, because prevention is so much easier than trying to recover. But let's go to the trying to recover, because I'm sure you deal with that as well. How do you handle school age kids who are truly struggling with ADHD? They can't focus. Deal with both situations. One scenario, they're already on medication. Another scenario, they're not.
So when they're on medication, which it definitely does happen, most of the parents that come to me will say, I really want to get my child off of these medications. And the very first thing that I'm going to make sure families understand, that's not my role. I can't take people off of medication. But what I can tell you is that I would like for you to tell whomever prescribed this that your child is involved in a developmental program, and that you're going to come to them eventually and say, I think it's time to start weaning the medications. I would encourage people not to play with the medications. They do play with the chemistry of the brain. And when you are a child in an open window of development, this up and down is just, it's not good for their brain. So our program, when they come in, everybody does aerobics. We teach them about their target heart rate, and they're going to do 20 minutes of aerobics. And we have visual stimulation to make their brain think that they're actually either on a trail, a canyon, whatever, because we're going to get that vestibular system firing up. When you do 20 minutes of aerobic activity, not only are you exercising your heart, but you are impacting a part of your brain called the hippocampus. And we've actually learned this from the Alzheimer's research, that when you do 20 minutes, you actually burn the stress chemicals off of the receptors on the hippocampus, and you actually produce a protein in your brain that is going to enhance new learning for 48 hours.
Wow.
Wow. So we want a fresh canvas when they come in here, you know?
Yeah. For folks, if you want that simplified, we're talking about exercise here. You have a special, they're watching something. So again, that visual input while you're moving is important. But it's exercise, and what a huge difference. And when you said it's taking off the stress hormones, are we talking cortisol or are we talking epinephrine? What stress hormones are?
Oh, if you look at what happens in a stress response, the hippocampus has a very high affinity for those chemicals, and they literally block learning and memory. Wow. If we are just, you're right, it is just exercise. What is the kid doing? Are they exercising or are they on devices?
Mm-hmm. Number one.
Where are they spending their time?
Get people off the devices. It is absolutely.
You've got to get these kids off of these devices. You know, they've actually done brain imagery on different populations of how many hours a week that they're on, and they've followed them, and they're actually developing more white matter in their brain. So we have two kinds of matter. We got gray matter, white matter. This is just the tissue in your brain. Gray is where you process information. White matter is how you get it from the front to the back, from the side to the side, you know, catacorner type of deal. If you've got too much white matter, you can't filter. It's like too many trains on the track. That would impact your ability to pay attention too. There's so many reasons why we are actually moving our children into a direction that they can't pay attention.
Yeah, I would agree. So number one, we're going to get these kids moving. What's your next most effective
number two
thing?
we're going to look at that chemistry like we were talking about with MTHFR. We look at food. We want to get the body burden, get that inflammation down as fast as possible, re-educate on the power behind eating the right way. Supplementation. Lots of times, though, we got to clean out those bellies before we even start giving supplements, because I don't want people to waste their money. And like one of the things that's really come up, especially over the last 4 years, I've just seen it one case after another. All of these kids are testing positive for SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, meaning that bacteria is in the wrong place. Now, this is my foundational lab that I look at and try to help the parent realize your child has a sick belly. If they have a sick belly, you could be feeding them a pristine diet and the good stuff is not getting in because their belly is not in the right place. So that I can't emphasize that one enough.
Which lab are you using for SIBO? Which is your favorite lab or approach for diagnosing SIBO?
We do a stool test. We use the company Vibrant America. And so they have a test where you're collecting the sample of stool and you ship it back and then they run the test.
Interesting. So, but the small intestine is higher. I haven't used that test, so this is new for me. How do you know by looking at the stool what's going on in the stomach and the small intestine?
Because of what's being eliminated out. So if you look at it, it's actually called a gut zoomer test. And they're looking at all the different enzymes, all the different bacteria that's actually being eliminated. And then where are those ranges supposed to be based on your age, your gender, et cetera. But there's actually 11 different points that they look at in that particular test.
Interesting. So SIBO, in my experience, has been one of the harder things to deal with. How do you then move forward if you're finding this in so many people?
Well, we have a great protocol. It's super simple. Are you familiar with the product called Biocidin?
Yes.
Okay. So we use Biocidin, and then we will use a binder for nighttime, and we'll end up doing two dosages of this each day. Start 10 minutes before a meal, move up to 5 drops. You don't go beyond 5 drops. Of the Biocidin, right. And then once you do that, you're going to add it a second time. So now what we're doing is you're using Biocidin, which is going to go in before the food. Anytime you put something in your mouth, it's going to create all that little movement that your stomach does and your intestines to clear stuff out. Then you're going to eat later in the day. You take your binding agent. And then what you're doing is you're pulling out the bad stuff. Now, a couple of weeks into this, we're going to start with a infant probiotic and short chain fatty acids. And the reason I use infant, I don't care how old you are, is because the first two bacterias that develop in the human body are bifidobacteria. And I just lost the last. The second one, lactobacillus, there we go. So this particular probiotic is just, you know, loaded with that. But what, a, you know, here's the other misrepresentation on probiotics. People stay on them all the time. And you really don't want to do that. They work when you take them, but you've got to let the probiotic be the new role model. The short chain fatty acid is what's going to allow the bacteria to stay around, let the bacteria feed on that food and good bacteria, and then you're going to start to recolonize for yourself. And this is such a simple little protocol that you literally could do this twice a year just to promote better gut health. And I've got some parents that really want to go see that it's gone. Other ones are very satisfied with how their child has changed, that they don't want to spend the money on another test. But every single time we've retested, the markers have all moved back to the green. And kids should just not have all of this disruption going on. They're so close to the beginning of life.
Sure,
and they've
they
only been around like 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, et cetera. And they're sick.
Yep. It's so much sickness, chronic illness in kids. Okay. Are there more steps? We've got the exercise, we've got the nutrition, we've got the SIBO
approach.
And then
it's neurofeedback. And that, I love neurofeedback. So I've been doing neurofeedback in my office since 2008. And one of the very first things that got me involved in that was my very first system allowed me to quantify if somebody's in a chronic stress pattern. And, you know, here's the hard part for all of us. Yes, you got a question?
Oh. No, I've been a case of chronic stress for the last 3-4 years. It's much better now that I've turned in my license, but I understand chronic stress.
Well, and again, look at our little population. Look at what's happening to them.
Yeah.
So we can actually measure what's going on in the brain, heart rate variability, skin conduction, muscle tone, temperature. And we introduce 4 stressors, and then we're literally creating a recording of that. And now we can quantify. Okay, so now we got to connect the dots. This is the hard part for everybody, is that our healthcare system has really always worked part and parcel. Okay, this is your stomach, this is your brain, and never putting things together. So even all these things that we have talked about, the bottom line is it causes stress. And we don't think our little people have stress, and they do. Mm-hmm. They could have stress because their body just won't cooperate with them. I've got kids that, because I always do little videos to show the parents, and I'll do it one particular primitive reflex test. And I literally have a little girl going, I can't get my body to do it. I mean, for that realization to come over a child, that's stressful. It could be, I can't do things like my peers. That's stressful. It could be SIBO. It's stressful. If you got an MTHFR, you feel stress. And you can't get stress to run through your body fast enough. And all of those things, if I'm in chronic stress, that means the arousal factor. Now, I hope that word sounds familiar because I talked about the Moro reflex. I think about Moro as the enchilada of all reflexes. It's arousal. It's really the foundation to know how to pay attention. First, babies are attended to. They cry. Somebody comes, picks them up, does whatever they need. Then you start to teach your little toddler how to attend to themselves. Best example is potty training. We take these little people, we put them on potties. They have no idea what you're asking them to do. But all of a sudden, the pressure from whatever they're sitting on, and then maybe you're reading a book, maybe you're singing a song, and they tinkle. And we throw a party. And there's that mirror neuron. Oh my gosh, this is something. And then it's repetition, frequency, and the child learns how to attend to their toilet needs. Well, if you weren't able to do those things easily, it would never be easy for you to pay attention to somebody else. They're foundational principles of how the brain has to come online. And that reflex is huge for that. Yeah. It also is, yeah.
Can you describe the moral reflex for folks?
Yes. So here's your little baby. It's all in the flexed position. And maybe somebody picked it up real quickly, or the temperature, it just got cold, or they're getting ready that they're hungry or something, and they go like that. So it's a quick open. Yeah. And it's perfectly normal up until about 4 months. It's supposed to integrate between 3 and 4 months postnatal. But it comes on 9 weeks in pregnancy. This is a huge, I mean, Dr. Paul, we could just go on and on about how this is a trajectory going from one place to another. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is to really plan to have your baby. Because if you go through a stressful pregnancy, you're going to have a stressed little baby.
Sure. And being born in a stressful period.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you got to be born. You know, none of us got to bypass that, right?
No, we can't bypass that. So let's wrap up the neurobiofeedback stuff. I still can't quite visualize what you do.
Okay. With neurofeedback?
Or what you were talking about, biofeedback or neurofeedback, I think.
So, well, we do the stress response so that we can figure out what does your little one need to work on. Most of the time, they all got to learn how to breathe again. So literally, you're going to put a little appliance on the finger. That's going to measure the heart rate. You're going to put a belt around the waist in order to measure the breathing. And we're going to teach them how to diaphragmatically breathe again. And when you do that, you literally stimulate what's called the vagus nerve, which is like seaweed through our body. And when you stimulate the vagus nerve, you literally reset and you really calm everything down. So this is right before they go over and they do their neurofeedback. The classic pattern with most of these kids with ADD, anxiety, depression, is we've got too much going on the right temporal lobe. Okay. And we find this in our brain map. We look at all of that data that helps us determine where the dysregulation is. A child that's over-aroused, that's going to be your ADHD kid. So we got to calm down that high pattern. And then we bring in another lead and we bring up some beta so that they can think. And that's what the beta brainwave helps you do. It's your executive function. So how do they know that they're doing it the right way? They get to watch a show. They get to pick it out. We do regulate the kind of shows that you watch. But you put a visual filter over the screen, and then there's also a sound. So now they're sitting there watching their show, and every time it's bright, because the filter will make it go dark and light based on where your brain waves are. You are controlling this. It's reading you. And when your brainwave gets into the ranges that are set, there's a reward and it's bright and you hear a little sound. And before you know it, it's clicking. And the subconscious goes, I got it. And we literally get to see how well they are engaged with the program at the end. Everything has so much data to it that you can actually know exactly how well they practiced during that session.
Wow. That's fascinating.
It is so cool. I love neurofeedback.
So what percentage would you say of the kids who come to see you with ADD, ADHD? We can talk about anxiety and depression as well, if you like. Get off their meds or end up really recovering more normal functioning and able to focus and sort of regain self-esteem and get back into life in a real positive way?
Well, I don't want to sound egotistical, but we are very results driven here. And in fact, one of the things that I will always say to my parents is, I want this to be the last place you come to. I'm the kind of person that people typically find after they've tried many, many things. And so we're really going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to pick up the rocks and we're going to look at the things that other people have missed. And we're going to be able to get the right test to validate it. If I have to co-manage even with somebody else, I'm going to do that as well. But we have a very high percentage of kids that do completely recover. The other part is that the smaller percentage, they don't like how hard the program is. This is not for the soft at heart. It is very physical around here. And it's all age appropriate, but we work.
Yeah.
And so you got to be willing to do that. And the people that don't end up finishing the program, they find it too hard or they don't want to make the changes in their diet. And yeah. I would love to tell you that all we got to do is these therapies, but the chemistry is huge.
Yeah. Fixing the diet is critical. So we need to team together. Maybe you've already done this or thought of doing this. You're located where?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia. I'm in Portland, Oregon. I can't get my kid to you. I wish I could get in your program myself. I think it would help me. How much of this can be done virtually? And is there a way to sort of make this process available everywhere?
Well, I've been trying to do the availability everywhere for a very long time. In fact, that's one of the things I have in my heart. And I'm always open to ideas. But I think when we went through the last 3 years, there's just been, you know, an enormous amount of stress for everyone. And we haven't had a point of reference for that. But it did make me build a lot of remote pieces. The most important part is that assessment. And unfortunately, the best way to do that is you come, you spend an intensive here. It could be a week or two. This is summertime. This is like the best time to try to do something like this. But we also do have remote neurofeedback systems. The lab stuff, piece of cake to do remote. Yeah. Some of the exercises are on my eSchool that I will direct people to. I have a virtual consultation. If an individual had somebody that they were working with that would be open, I've done a lot of training for people. And we need this. We need to get stuff in our school systems. We need to get other providers looking at development in order to get these kids going in the right direction as quickly as possible.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. Giving you the last word here for our audience, there are so many people out there who are struggling with everything from autism, autism spectrum, ADD, ADHD, and those are all labels, but you and I know what that actually means for people. It's yes. not easy when you're trying to raise yeah. a child who's struggling that much. What can you tell folks to give them hope, or what's on your heart to share?
Well, one of the biggest things is if your program that you do have your child in is working, stay there, follow it, use it, move. The earlier you start, the better. Don't wait and see. Children really do need you to come in as quickly as you can. And please remember what I talked about earlier. I now have my own personal experience where my daughter was literally back in diapers and we had to redo it. And everything I knew to do was implemented and she has her life back and it can be done. These brains are marvelous if you give them all the pieces that they need all at the same time. I know it's hard, but also realize you have great resources around you. You have Dr. Paul. Now you've been introduced to me. There's been many great podcasts through Dr. Paul that can give you those pieces of insight. We have to educate ourselves. We have to armor ourselves with our knowledge because our children are counting on us.
Beautiful. One last thought question. What about late teens, early adults, even later in adulthood? Maybe you didn't get the kind of care and management, or even everything was tried and you're still compromised, whether it be with those severe non-speaking autistic kids, or it could be obviously anxiety, depression, and focus. Would this work for them also?
It does. We've got, I would say probably 5% of my practice is adults, because I'm one provider that has neurofeedback. That's been a really big attraction to reach out to me for the adult population. But what has been so interesting is when they get to a place that they've got good flexibility in the brain from doing neurofeedback, my second step for them is I'm going to send them a questionnaire so that I can really fine tune what is it that you want to really change. And almost 100% of the time, it all goes back to things that they know that they were struggling with as children. And I find that really incredible. So again, maybe we can't do everything perfectly, but we can certainly make a difference when we put our body and our brain together and give it the chemistry that it needs.
Thank you, Dr. Laura. I didn't think I was going to enjoy this as much as I did. I don't know why, but this has been amazing. You're a really gift to the world, and hopefully we find a way to make this technology and what you're doing even more available. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor to meet you.
I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.